Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 285. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance. The website is higherhumanperformance.com. You knew it would be. Today, it's episode 285, and I'm going to talk with you about leading with collaboration. As always, the episode is brought to you by my company, Bula, B-U-L-A, Network, LLC. Bula Network is a boutique executive and leadership coaching company. And you can find out more about all of that by going to the website, higherhumanperformance.com. It's all about leadership. Novice leaders are often tempted to overestimate their own value and importance. At least that's been somewhat my experience. They might incorrectly think that they need to have the answers. It's common. You know, we believe that our own worth is highly determined by our own soul abilities. I find that that's a commonplace myth, and it's wrong. History shows us that many strong and productive leaders have behaved that way. Impose your will. Impose your will was, well, it was more than a phrase in times past. It was a way of life among many leaders of the past. Sometimes the only distinction between an evil tyrant and somebody that the world might view as a genius is the work product. Steve Jobs, according to many sources, he was quite tyrannical. And yet we view him, our culture views him as sort of this mad genius because his work product. And the work product was just spectacular. I mean, it resulted in so many things that we love. Yours truly, I purchased in 1984 the very first Macintosh computer. So I've been what they call an Apple fanboy for a long, long time. So it was with Steve Jobs, but boy, you can read about him and read many accounts by many different people, and pretty tyrannical. Other leaders, equally tyrannical, or maybe less so, they are viewed sometimes as evil men because, well, their work product, it didn't impact us. Maybe it didn't impact the people of their day. Maybe their leadership just resulted in record profits. You know, we revere business leaders who accomplish great things, not just revenues, not just profits. Did you see that TV series? I don't remember if it was on Discovery or History Channel, The Men Who Built America. Compelling stuff, really compelling, and it was very well done. Well, the men who built America were largely self-centered, overly driven, egomaniacs willing to do whatever it took to propel their businesses and their market dominance forward. I mean, market dominance was a big deal. If you could get a monopoly on a thing, man, get it. And not much has changed today, except there's a lot more regulation in place to try to prevent such things. But they built buildings, railroad tracks, bridges, cars, other things that changed our country. Could they have accomplished? Question, could they have accomplished what they did without the tyranny? Well, we'll never know. I have my own theory, and my own theory is I don't think so. You know, time and place and all that. Leadership in America in the 1800s looked quite different than leadership in 2015 America. Well, in 2015, the world, for that matter. Last Sunday, there was a new episode of The Good Wife. And in that episode, the younger attorneys who aren't yet named partners, they are complaining to one of the named partners how they do all the work. And at the last minute, a named partner is going to come in here, swoop in, and take 70% of the billing and all the credit. And these junior attorneys, they're not real happy about it. Happens all the time. Happens all the time. The boss takes credit for the good work or the good idea of a subordinate. without so much as giving any credit, any recognition to the subordinate. It's a worthwhile podcast topic, but let's table that topic for another day, shall we? Because for today, it's about the leader's obligation and the leader's value in fostering collaboration. And I'm not talking about collaboration for the sake of it, but I could. I mean, there is something to helping people feel included, making people feel important. But, you know, that could be a natural outgrowth of the hard work put into helping people improve their performance and their satisfaction with their lives as well. Leadership development is not a solo activity. Yes, you can lead your own life, and you should. But leadership, the way we're using it, leadership development is done by interacting with other people. It's about learning how to impact others through serving people. And that's not how everybody views leadership, but that's how I roll. Now, let's see if I can't make it easier for you. I mean, what will all this talk of world-class folks who have accomplished great things in business and the tyranny of some of these great leaders of the 1800s. I'm rereading right now a biography. It's a really thick book on Andrew Carnegie. It's the one by David, how does he pronounce his last name? Nassau, N-A-S-A-W. It's a huge book. I've dipped into this book before, and I've bailed out on it before. I got to tell you, I fear I might bail out on it again. Not because it's a thick book, but because it's filled with so many historical details that just sometimes drown me. I appreciate the author's completeness. We'll see how far I get into it this time. Carnegie was a very accomplished guy, obviously. This is absolutely a get-it-done kind of guy, as so many of his contemporaries were. Very driven, very competitive, very strategic, and like most titans of industry back in the day, fully capable of self-delusion, fully capable of ruthlessness, fully capable of doing whatever it took to gain the upper hand in market share, market dominance. So don't mistake high achievement for leadership. Now, a person can be both, but they are very different things. A person can be a high achiever, and a person can be an effective leader. They may be one and not the other. People can be the boss, or they can be in charge and still be poor leaders. Carnegie and many other men who made America, they were very successful, made tons and tons of money, accomplished tons and tons of things. They accomplished great things during a time when our country desperately needed infrastructure. Now, they also came onto the scene during some very critical years where basic things like railroads and fuel and steel had extraordinarily high value. Today, high technology presents the opportunities. But you know, nothing trumps. I mean, does it? Does anything trump the basics of owning the transportation? Cars, railroads, trucking, shipping. Does anything trump owning the fuel? Oil, gas. Hello, I'm here in Texas. And construction technology, including roads and bridges and buildings. I mean, these are fundamental, foundational things that the titans of industry, they ruled in those areas. The technologies associated with the internet today are probably the closest thing that we've got to the opportunities experienced by these early men who made America. And some might argue that it's easier to do today, well, because costs can be low and money or funding is relatively easy to get. Certainly compared to what those men had to endure. But it could also be argued competition is more fierce as well. Because the barrier to enter any market, it's low enough that it allows more players. But you know, none of that matters because none of that has anything to do with becoming a great leader. Great business builders they can lack the ability to effectively lead even a small group of people. Now, they still might be able to instill enough fear in people to solicit good work, but it doesn't make them a great leader. Edison's lab was the place to be if you were in that space, even though he was not a good leader. And so the technical people of the day may have wanted to be there, and they may have, many of them, may have remained there even under poor circumstances, poor conditions, as far as the way they were treated. So don't confuse high accomplishment with great leadership. That's the point. Now, conversely, some men and women are great leaders, but they may not generate great revenue. They may not build bridges. They may not donate millions of dollars to worthy causes. In fact, some of them are poor. Others, they're just not interested in building wealth. And still others, well, they work in nonprofit spaces, so there just isn't a revenue or profit motive for them. And still others might serve in city government or in faith-based causes. You can be a great leader and not be boss. And you could be the boss and you could be a pathetic leader. Now, you can still be the most skilled at the work, but you could be the most incompetent at leading. And you might be maybe the least skilled at the actual work, but be a stellar leader. Think about that. Can a person be a great leader and some of those other things? Could I be a good leader and be highly skilled? Well, sure. Could I be a really good leader and also be a good boss? Well, of course you could. But we're talking about leadership, and we're specifically trying to get to collaboration, which is what's required if any leader is going to be great. Doesn't mean that great leaders listen to just anybody or that they listen to everybody. And nor does it mean that they abdicate decision-making to their team or their organization. It just means they understand the value of group thinking and group participation. And it means they realize that however many people are at the table, it means that there are potentially that many viewpoints and that many ideas that are worth hearing. But before you can hear them, you got to find ways to foster sharing. I mean, the person at the table who is afraid to share a thought, how much help are they providing? A leader can either elicit participation and collaboration, or a leader can shut it down. Great leaders, effective leaders, they get the work done better because they're busy serving others, namely the people most responsible for getting the work done. People can do more. They can do it better. And I'll throw this in for good measure. They can have more fun in the process if they have a great leader. Yeah, but too often, far too often, the person in charge thinks that they've got to have all the answers. It's a myth. It's a myth. Back in the last episode, episode 284, I talked about how what got you here won't necessarily get you there. Well, that idea rears its ugly head right here again. The boss, that's usually who we think is the leader, gets to be the boss by maybe being better than the rest. He or she might be able to get things done that others can't or couldn't. Or maybe they've got qualifications that others don't have. But, you know, in far too many cases, the boss got to be the boss in one of a few ways. I'm just going to give you six real quick. Six ways that a lot of people got to be boss. A, they own the joint. Well, you can't trump that. I mean, the owner owns it, right? B, they're family to those who own the joint. Son, daughter, brother, uncle. C, they were extremely good at something. That is, their own work product was shining. Sometimes it happens, you'll see maybe a financial guy, a guy really good at crunching the numbers. and he gets entrusted to the top C-suite because he was really good at that. And maybe he was really good at it at a time when the company really needed that. Now, it may not be what they need now, but that's how he got there. Really good at something. D, they rose through the ranks by being good each step of the way. Yeah, maybe they started out at the dock and did a good job, got to be supervisor, did a good job, got the next bump up, did a good job. Everywhere they've been, they've done a good job. So, hey, why not give them the next bump up? E, they outlasted others. You've seen this. I mean, the guy gets the nod because, well, he's been here the longest. He knows the place like the back of his hand. I mean, does he have any of the qualifications of leadership? What do we care? Come on, he knows the joint. He's been here since he was a pup. F, they were an easy choice. Maybe they were the convenient choice. Maybe they were the most available choice. Maybe they were the most inexpensive choice. You know, we can give the job to Harry, and Harry doesn't want near as much money as these other cats. Now, there are other reasons. There are many other reasons why people become the boss, but I give you those six just to kind of give you enough of an idea to prove my point. And the point is this. Bosses tend to be the person with the answers, or that's what we think. Or they tend to be people who feel they need to know the answers. They need to have the answers. Thankfully, I will tell you that I'm seeing that change as the demographics of the workplace change. Increasingly, organizations are going to a non-hierarchical structure where people collaborate, where people use collective knowledge and wisdom of the group. You've probably noticed Google and many other companies, high-tech companies especially, are fond of this business model of not really having direct reports. And for those of us who are baby boomers, it may seem, man, that's odd. How in the world would that work? But it's quite an interesting concept. Now, I think it's a good thing because I'm quite fond of fostering positive group dynamics. Great ideas, great solutions often come out of great dialogue and great questions. When I was running luxury retailing companies, I have long said for decades, the quality of our questions determines the quality of our business. And it was mostly applied to sales teams who were helping customers, the end user. And the more questions we could ask of our customers to facilitate, to find out what do they need, what do they really need, the better the business. The better the business. Not only was it a great differentiator from the competition, but it helped us serve people better. I mean, come on, the more you can find out about your customer and what they need and what frustrates the snot out of them, the better you can help them. Great dialogue, great questions. I do think facilitate great business. Not to mention that solutions often come more quickly with added brain power in the room, added points of view, different perspectives. Someone over in manufacturing may have a very different opinion about a thing, about a process, than people in logistics. And that can be a good thing. The challenge I often find in helping leaders fully embrace collaboration, and let's define the term collaboration. I just mean letting other people have a seat at the table where ideas can be openly exchanged. That's what I mean. People having a seat at the table where ideas can be openly exchanged. That's collaboration. Do you have that? Do you not have that? The challenge that I find is the need of the boss or the guy at the head of the table, whomever that may be, to be the smartest guy or gal in the room. And if you are the leader and you're at the head of the table and you have that hang up, I would encourage you to unburden yourself. I mean, for starters, your people already know that you are not the brightest bulb in the socket. And for another thing, even if you are the smartest guy in the room, it's likely better to be the wiser person instead of the smartest person. So I'm encouraging you to foster the dialogue, ask the questions, probe, vet the ideas. Don't squash the passion of the arguments. You know, you need to let your people mount the pulpit and preach their idea. You don't want to silence the congregation of people who are going to be carrying out whatever plan you agree on. Too many good ideas have been sabotaged because the boss didn't allow people to be heard, and it robbed them of the opportunity to buy into an idea that they might have otherwise happily followed. But because nobody asked them, nobody wanted their opinion, nobody listened to them, and now they just see it as tyranny. No, I'm encouraging you, I'm challenging you to be better than that. And that really is the point of today's show. Get out of your own way. Get out of your own way. Unshackle yourself from feeling like you've got to come up with the best ideas or the best solutions. Try framing the problem in a way so your team can clearly understand what we're up against. This is our problem. This is what we're up against. This is our challenge. This is our opportunity. And then turn them loose. Turn them loose to figure out ways to fix it, to solve it. And don't be hasty to respond to what's said by anybody in the room. Avoid judgment so that the conversation will just keep pushing forward. Instead, if nobody asks the question that you think should be asked, then ask it. Just do it in a non-threatening way. Do it in a non-confrontational way. I mean, it could be something like, okay, well, if we do that, will we have to make any adjustments to our delivery schedule? Will we have to make any adjustments to some other part of our process? That doesn't threaten anybody, but it's a good question. Could be. If you're a boss who isn't accustomed to leading like this, here's the warning. Here's the red flag. Prepare for a lot of silence. Prepare for the room to just kind of go dark. Because they're not used to this. Okay, it's okay. It's perfectly okay. Because you're going to have to prove to your team that you are serious about this. You're serious about wanting their input. And if you haven't been getting their input, shame on you, but start now. Start now. There's not one thing wrong with you telling the people in the room that you want to hear candid conversation and dialogue about the issue. Maybe you need to lean on somebody. Maybe you need to prime the pump, as they say, and you need to lean on somebody that you know is going to help get the ball rolling if necessary. But as much as possible, you need to resist the urge to chime in and take over. Now, at first, you're going to be tempted to cut to the chase. I can tell you right now what's going to happen. I've seen it way too many times. You need to resist. You're going to sit here and think, man, alive, this is dragging on. And you're going to want to grab the bull by the horns and take charge. No, don't do it. Just sit on it. Resist. I'm telling you, the process is very important. People need time to warm up to the comfort of being able to have these conversations in front of you. They'll get better at it. Come on. They're not practiced at it if you haven't been doing this, so give them a chance. I mean, nobody hopped up on the pogo stick and got it right the first time, and your people aren't either. All the eyes and the ears in the room going to be on you, so brace yourself for it. Make sure the entire room learns this is a safe place, man. This is a safe, safe space for us to share our ideas. Don't scoff at anything. I don't care how ridiculous the idea is. And you need to protect everybody in the room. I mean, don't let the bullies take over. I've seen situations where leaders weren't accustomed to doing this, and the first shot out of the barrel, somebody rose to the occasion and thought, well, boss doesn't seem to be taking charge, so I'm going to. No, don't let that happen. And don't let anybody belittle somebody else's idea. And that's pretty easy to stop. And I give you one hint that works really well. If somebody puts down somebody's other idea as being crazy or ridiculous, have one in the bag. Think about one of your craziest, maybe stupidest idea. Yeah, you've had them. You've probably got a litany of them to pick from like I do. Think about one of them and be able to pull that out at a moment's notice if the room begins to belittle somebody or mock somebody who's come up with an idea that the group thinks, well, that's ridiculous. That'll never work. Pull out one of your own. Pull out one of your own. And laughter. Laughter may happen, and that's a good thing. Don't try to suppress laughter. That's perfectly good, I think. You know, you need to let the team enjoy the process, even if it's some good-natured ribbing that's going on. And especially if the laughter is at you. Man, I'm all about fostering as much of that as you can. Let the people know you're human. And the whole thing hinges right there. There's the elephant in the room. as we say. The whole thing hinges on your willingness to be human and to let the room be human. You got to let your people be human. Leaders can foster collaboration if the whole team feels there's no negative consequence here. Nothing bad's going to happen. This is great. It's going to be easier for them to just sit quietly, though, and not participate at all if they think there's going to be a remote chance that there's going to be a smackdown. Nobody wins. Nobody wins if people are sitting there on their hands. Nobody wins if people are sitting on their tongues. Nobody wins if people are withholding their ideas, good or otherwise. And besides, you know, those of us who fancy ourselves as idea people, I mean, come on, don't we know that most of our ideas are just ridiculously stupid? But you know what we do? Are you like this? We just rip and snort through these ideas because we know that occasionally we may come up with one that's brilliant. But yeah, okay, so we've got to go through this big pile of crap to get to the good ones. It's worth it. It's worth it. We all need our best ideas to help propel our businesses and our organizations forward. Okay, so what? You have to hear 99 bad ideas to get to the best one. That's okay, so be it. Let's just get on with it. And it can be kind of fun to go through those 99. Here's what I predict is going to happen, because I've seen it way too many times. People engage. The wheels begin to turn faster and faster as people begin to enjoy this process. And you know what happens? I'll tell you what happens. I'll give you the word, and I love this word. They ponder. Yeah. People start pondering, and pondering is a good thing. You want people willing to ponder at work. You don't want human drones. You want your team to think. You want them to think well. Guess what that means? You need them to ponder. You need a group of people willing to embrace the art of pondering. And at long last, you're going to give them an environment where they can do their best thinking together. Did I mention fun? I mentioned fun, didn't I? Well, there's going to be a lot more fun than sitting there listening to you tell them, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's what I've decided we're going to do. And you blindside them with something they had no part or lot in. Here's my challenge. I will put my team, who came up with a great solution and who owned the execution of it. So let's be clear here. I'll put my team, who came up with a great solution and who owned the execution of that idea, I'll put them up against your team who was informed of your brilliant decision all day long. And my team will kick your team's butt every single time. Well, not to mention, my team's going to have a whole lot more fun, because winning is always way more fun than losing. There you have it. Short, sweet, to the point, right? Way just the way you like it. And the way I sometimes deliver it. Episode 285, Leading with Collaboration. I would love it, if you would do me a huge solid favor. Go to the website, higherhumanperformance.com. On the right-hand side, you'll see a graphic. It's the cover art to the podcast. And in yellow type, it says, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Click that link. Go over to iTunes. It's cumbersome. I know. Come on. It'll take you five. No, it won't take you 5 minutes. It'll take you three. Well, it depends on how long the review is. Yes, I want it to be a 5-star review. Come on. I'm not going to ask for anything other than a 5-star review. Come on. It's worth that. Click on that cover art and it will take you right there. That's what I'd like for you to do for me. What can I do for you besides the free podcast and all the brilliant insight that I provide? Tongue firmly in cheek. Come on. If you've not listened to me before, I appreciate you listening. But know this, I take the work very seriously. I don't take myself very seriously. Me? Hey, my name's Randy Cantrell. I'm your host here. Thank you very much. I'm coming to you from North Central Texas, a.k.a. Dallas-Fort Worth. Inside the Yellow Studio. Thanks for listening.